Okay, we're back in the double overtime here on WAER. Zach Maul and Mark Weber. We are now joined by our reporter, Eric Duick. Eric, can you just give us kind of an overview of how Scott Schaefer was acting at the press conference?
He wanted to put his hand through his wall, but then said, "Sorry, Mom, I know you're here. I won't break my hand in front of you." But obviously, he was not just angry, because any coach would be angry after a loss, but he was certainly more frustrated than I've personally seen him after any loss this season. Kept saying, "Doggone it." Really, really, really emotional from a head coaching standpoint. It wasn't just the typical, "Oh, we lost to a better team." He didn't specify whether his frustration happened to do with the coaching staff or players not executing, but it was just an overall arch of frustration from him.
Eric Duick is with us on the Double Overtime. He was reporting for us. Zach Maul and Mark Weber with you on the Double Overtime. Got about 10 more minutes here in the show. How did he evaluate his offense's performance?
Said Terrell Hunt has to be more consistent. I asked him how he would assess Hunt's progression with the deep ball from the start of the ACC season to now, because even though Hunt has blatantly just struggled profusely, he obviously made a couple of nice throws to McFarlane and Eskridge in the end zone, as well as the touchdown pass to Cornelius. So there seemed to be some improvement from what was Hunt's biggest weakness in the deep ball. But Schaefer just said, "We need more consistency from the quarterback position, and there's no way around it."
Lots of consistency from the quarterback is certainly a question, but was there any talk about why the run game was not shown too much in this game? Jerome Smith, only 17 carries in a game that he was expected to get 28 by some?
Well, a lot of that had to do with the Pitt offense being on the field way too much. Jay Bromley was asked about the first quarter when the Syracuse defense was on the field for about 11 minutes. He said that he didn't want to blame any unit in particular, Bromley that is, but definitely said he felt helpless. My interpretation of that had to be that there was defensive frustration about the offensive play calling and lack of production. Again, that's not a direct quote of Bromley, but rather my interpretation of his words. Bromley is a very stand-up guy, a captain. He's not going to come out there and bash the offense publicly. But about midway through the second quarter, Bromley was jawing with a couple of players on the sideline. I don't know if that had to do with frustration with the offensive staff, because I've seen in football before a defense actually get angry with how the other side of the ball was performing. This could have been one of those cases, but not particularly sure.
Eric Duick is with us on the Double Overtime. I'm Zach, that's Mark. Did any other defensive players talk about fatigue setting in? Because I saw it on my TV screen. They looked tired.
Darrell Eskridge was out for a few moments. Didn't really speak to fatigue in particular. Actually said he was rather pleased with the efforts of the defensive backs, especially minus a Julian Wiggum and even a Keon Lynn. The Keon Lynn absence is kind of in the backdrop at this point because it happened so long ago against Clemson. But when Wiggum goes down as well and you're now down two defensive backs and two of your top five defensive backs, it becomes more of an issue. But the defense didn't want to make any excuses, and you really have to applaud the defense for not making excuses when, quite frankly, this is the first time all year where the defense has kept the offense in the game, and yet the offense couldn't come through. The offense has been bad all year, but really aside from the Penn State game, the last 8 weeks of the season, it's been a story of defense keeps the offense in the game, and the offense comes through unless it's against a Clemson or a Florida State when you're just losing no matter what.
We're speaking with Eric Duick here on the Double Overtime on WAER. How did Schaefer explain the fake field goal debacle at the end of the game?
Well, I'm not sure if the AER broadcast captured this. I don't remember the AER broadcast capturing this because I was right in between the two play-by-play voices, but AER went to commercial, and right around the time of commercial, there was just blatant, and I mean blatant, heads popping off. You're talking about the offensive lineman,
especially Sean
and
Rogers,
coach is just going at it. Rogers in particular with a special teams assistant. So Schaefer was asked about this, and the question was phrased appropriately, but he did not answer the question remotely. He really danced around the conversation. I can't tell you I'm surprised that Schaefer refused to answer the question. I don't know whether that was raw emotion or whether Schaefer was just flat out upset that his offensive line was out late. That seemed to be, from an outsider's perspective, the situation. The offensive line was not out fast enough, because I remember observing the play, and there's 5 seconds left on the clock, on the play clock, that is, and 52 yards. And I'm thinking to myself, Ryan Norton is about to kick the biggest field goal of his life, and he got out onto the field about 5 seconds before the play clock expired. I'm thinking there's no chance in hell he makes the field goal. But then it turns out that Pitt calls a timeout right before what was about to be a fake.
Eric Duick is our guest on the Double Overtime. I'm Zach Maul. That's Mark Weber. Wrapping things up here on the show, how did the players treat Boston College? Was there any talk about looking forward to the next game?
Jay Bromley said this team, Syracuse, can't act like it's good this week, especially in practice. He said there's flat out no way around it. We have to not just say, oh, we shot ourselves in the foot. He said flat out, we got to just put the gun away. It can't be about excuses anymore. It's about capitalization. And Bromley did acknowledge that Boston College is a vastly improved football team. Bromley actually also said today, we weren't the better team. We lost to the better team. So wasn't a fan of excuses and said now it's really back to the drawing board for not just Bromley, but the whole football team.
Lots of questions with this receiving squad, but some positives. Beckett Wales really stepped up today. Alvin Cornelius
left the game with an injury, actually, Wales did. We didn't hear about that. Hickey was also
really?
Out for the
what
game.
Was, do you know what the injury was?
The Hickey injury appeared to be
a left cleat removed.
And it was a lower body injury, as I heard
but
from
Sue. But what was the Beckett Wales one?
The Beckett Wales one, he just smashed his head against the turf a couple times in pain. We were not told what the specificity of the injury was because it was rather late in the game when he left the field.
So hopefully not a concussion like Isaiah Johnson has just suffered recently, and he said that he got that sack and didn't even know where he was. Very scary of that. So Alvin Cornelius came out of pretty much nowhere. Beckett Wales having a great game and got a lot of tough passes in that game. Was there any praise about those receivers and why they were used more?
It was really actually all about Darrell Eskridge in the post game because Cornelius, you could observe for yourselves that the guy went out and performed. But for Eskridge, Schaefer said Eskridge has been nagging him to try and play receiver ever since Eskridge has walked through the doors here at Syracuse. Eskridge did play a lot of receiver in high school, but Schaefer actually wanted to know from us in the media room, did you see that replay? Because I thought it was awful close, but the consensus among the people in the media seemed to be that the ball didn't hit the ground from what we saw, but rather that Eskridge just bobbled it, so he never had full possession. But regardless, our perspective just has to be on this. Eskridge is in the game because the rest of the receivers, especially Minus and Esteem and West, they're just not good anymore. Now, naturally, McDonald was receiving a lot of criticism for this scenario where Eskridge was in the game at a crucial time, but part of that criticism stemmed from McDonald's play call a few moments earlier when he sent two offensive tackles out at receiver. Considering the Eskridge play was so close, if McDonald doesn't experiment a few plays prior, then maybe the criticism isn't as loud.
What happened on the Eskridge play, it was the Calvin Johnson rule.
Right, exactly, that's what I'm saying.
He didn't complete the process of the catch.
Which is a controversial rule to begin with. I know some people think if you catch the ball, you catch the ball, but he didn't really roll over with full possession of the football.
How did Coach Schaefer address the offensive play calling? Did he touch on that at all?
No, I honestly, nobody had the cojones to ask Schaefer about it. After he, and you know what? Partly I'm to blame for that, and so is everybody else in the media room, but
we'll forgive you for now.
At this point, Schaefer was first asked really about the scenario with the kicking game, and once he gave such a poor or non-committal answer, it almost would have become useless to follow it up about the offense. I know that sounds stupid. You've got to ask the questions. But at this moment, when Schaefer had already referenced that he wanted to punch his hand through a wall and he had already completely dodged one controversial yet very fair question, I don't see how he was going to give a better answer about the offense.
Spending a few minutes talking SU football with our reporter Eric Duick on the Double Overtime on WAER. 3 minutes left in the show, so we'll wrap it up like we always got to wrap it up. Any news, notes, nuggets?
Well, I was sort of, or not even surprised, but it was caught my attention this week when Scott Schaefer said, we need help right now from the Syracuse fan base. And I know you're going to hear these nonsensical turnstile announcements versus the attendance, but you never hear what actually happens turnstile-wise. And the crowd was flat out about half empty, and even when it was a one-point game, people were walking literally out of the stadium with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So I don't know if it's fair to say attendance is a marker of where a football program is, but for a team to be playing for its bowl life and nobody to be in the stands on a weekend, some people get a week off around Thanksgiving time. I understand the students were not in attendance because most have left for break, but you still should have had a much better showing even from the general public.
That's our reporter, Eric Duick, joining us on the Double Overtime. Thank you, sir.
No problem.